Why is Connie laughing at me? I said I got a guest coming up right now. We're going to talk about childbirth. She's pointed at me and laughed. Well, yeah, listen, we men think we know everything.
Oh, yes.
There's one thing we absolutely positively do not know unless we are an OBGYN. And that's anything about childbirth or anything about having anything to do with it, except for maybe the start of it. Okay? That 2 minutes. Once that 2 minutes is over, it's none of our business anymore. We are no help whatsoever. On the phone with us right now is Dr. Randi Hutter Epstein. She has a new book called Get Me Out, A History of Childbirth from the Garden of Eden to the Sperm Bank. Doctor, how are you today?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
We are very, very good. Is that a fair statement that men know nothing?
It is a fair statement. You know, and it's funny because I've had people say, well, tell me about what it was like during natural childbirth when men came into the birthing room and we helped. And all the men always say, yeah, tell us about when we started to help. You weren't helping. We allowed you in to watch. Even all that deep breathing coaching was like a nice name that Lamaze gave to your title. But it was really, here, you're allowed to watch, and maybe you can relax your spouse or your partner. But, yeah, you weren't really that much help.
Well, doctor, let me tell you a story, and this is absolutely true. I have a couple kids. I have a few kids. And my oldest son, when he was born, and I'm not good with doctors types of blood and things like that. I'm just not good with it. But, you know, I'm in with my ex, and I'm like, hey, breathe, do the thing like you're just talking about. And the doctor says we can see his head. And I make the awful mistake of looking up at that mirror, and I just got this overwhelming queasiness to me, and I said, I'll be right back. I walked out of the delivery room, leaned up against the wall, was sliding down the wall as I was passing out and throwing up, and the last thing I remember is a nurse at the nurse's station say, we're losing another one. And the first time I ever held my oldest son, I was sitting in a wheelchair because they wouldn't let me walk back into the delivery room. That's absolutely a positively true story.
You know, I don't think you're alone. I think it's more common than men want to admit. And it's funny because in the 1960s was when men were first allowed in. Otherwise, you were like smoking a cigar in the waiting room. I think it's gotten to the point where there are a lot of men. They're like, oh, wow, I'm kind of nervous to be there. But you're embarrassed to say, I don't think I can handle this.
No, when we had the second one, I was fine with sitting in the waiting room with the older one, waiting to hear what happened, as opposed to being in there. Now, there's been a lot of changes, as you mentioned. You know, men weren't even really in the delivery room way back then. But something I was reading about in the bio they sent me about you and your book, there was actually, when they started using forceps, they describe it in this bio, it says, a closely kept family secret for generations. Why?
Oh, because medicine has always been a competitive field. You know, doctors like to complain today and say, it's become a business. Our wonderful, noble profession has become a business. No, actually, it's always been a business. So in the 1600s, when this family of male midwives figured out how to make a forceps that gently got the baby out without damaging the baby, they didn't share their new technique with all their colleagues. They hid it so that people knew, oh, wow, just in case you needed forceps, you better call the Chamberlains because they're the ones that know how to deliver a baby in case things go wrong. And they became the delivery male midwives to the aristocracy, to the royal family in England. And they had all these weird ways of hiding the details of what this forceps looked like. They kept it in a box the size of a coffin, so you had no idea how big it was. And apparently, according to some of the literature written about them, they even blindfolded the woman on the delivery table just in case, I guess, she was going to take notes and come up with some competing force.
Wow. Now, answer this for me if you can. Do you know the percentage of natural childbirths or as opposed to cesarean sections?
Well, you know, it's funny that, natural is such a sort of big name for, in terms of cesarean section rates, you know, in terms of natural, this can mean vaginal birth with using drugs. But in terms of cesarean section rate, it's funny you say that because I've been reading things saying, oh, it's declining, it's declining. So I looked at the most recent statistics. The most recent statistics we know from 2015, because it takes a while to get the data, said the cesarean section rate now in America is 32%. That's still a lot. And I thought, well, decline from what? A year before 2014, it was 32.2%. Oh. I don't know. Yes, it is a decline.
Yeah.
To me, it's not a huge decline. Are some C-sections necessary? Absolutely. But 32% of them? I don't know if 32% of births need to be C-section.
Answer this for me. Do doctors mostly know? I mean, because I don't know how prevalent midwives still are, but was there a point in time, like, if you had a midwife in there, where mid-birth or mid-delivery, they realize that it wasn't going the way it should, and it may have to be a cesarean section? Or is that something doctors have known going in? Or is that on the fly, so to speak?
You know, a lot of times, that's when we think of the way cesarean sections should be, they're not planned. Now we have more planned ones. But that's what the cesarean section had always been, that during the process of delivery, something happens, the baby gets stuck, and they think, oh, okay, we have to go in and remove this baby surgically. So, yes, it's sort of the way it's always been, whether there's been a midwife at the birth or whether it's the OBGYN at the birth saying, okay, now I have to do a C-section. What's been happening more lately is not just doctors insisting on C-sections, but some women say, I want to plan this birth and I'd rather have a C-section. So as it is in the history of childbirth, it's not blame the doctor or blame the woman, but it's this push and pull between what women want and what the doctors want.
Who came up with the idea, or not who came up, but why maybe did they come up with the idea of delivering babies in pools and hot tubs and things like that?
You know, that's pretty recent, and that started, probably in around the 1970s or 80s, and that wasn't physicians. This was women who were thinking that, well, it's very, you know, the babies are basically in a bath in your body, floating around in the water that's in your body in the womb, and then it's very jarring was the feeling of these people that started the giving birth in a bath process. So to sort of ease babies from going from womb to the outside, it was like, well, how about we go from womb to water to then outside? I think most doctors feel that it's not necessary. There are probably some doctors that think it really doesn't ease the process because they have to get out anyhow. But they also came around saying it's not that dangerous either. It seems scary to go from when we think of the baby gasping for their first breath.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they kind of go into the tub and then are scooped right up from there.
Let me ask you this. One of the other things in the bio, it says how medical developments, in addition to decreasing modesty in the delivery room, led to a sharp decline in infant mortality as well as greater survival rates for the mothers. Why decreasing more modesty? Why is that a part of that?
Because in the late 1800s, early when doctors first started to enter the birthing room, it used to be an all-women's affair. So your midwife was a woman, you had your sisters, your mom. And then when male doctors started to say, you know what, we're better at handling this, we're going to come, around upper-class women, not for all women, but around the upper-class women, the culture of modesty prevailed. So there were times in the 1800s that a doctor, a male doctor, would come in the room, and the woman would have a white sheet over her, and the doctor, just not to embarrass her, would just stick his hands under the white sheet and blindly deliver this baby, and sometimes even using forceps. So I think it helped when we could see what we were doing.
Sounds like a snap from center in a football game. That's what it kind of sounds like. Do you know this, when people talk about, and again, I'm, you know, asking because I'm a guy, when people talk about, oh, you should play music for your baby, you should put a speaker up to your stomach while you're pregnant, do those type of things work?
You know, we really don't know. We don't know. I have to think that anything that makes you relax can't hurt, maybe help. On the other hand, I think if you're stressed out, I'm not so sure how dangerous that's going to be either. You know, I hate to blame women, but relaxing, enjoying, listening to music, I would think there's nothing dangerous about it. If anything, it could help. Do I think it's going to make your baby into a musician? Probably not. What is the baby hearing? I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know.
Now, one of the things you can talk about it is the craziest way, I'm scared to hear this, I think, the craziest way that people have tried to conceive, going back to the Middle Ages when monks were writing how-to guides for baby making. That sounds horrifying.
Yeah, isn't it typical, though, that men who knew nothing about something decided that they would become the experts and write about it?
That sounds kind of common right now, but go on.
It's kind of not shocking when you think about it, but it is true that in the when you go back to the 12th century, there were monks who not only wrote a guidebook about birth, but their book included like how to have sex in order to up the chances of becoming pregnant. So it was a little bit of soft porn. I don't know who read the book. I don't know if people believed it. I don't know if people back in the 12th century were taking this book and going, really? I'm not going to listen to a monk. Or they thought, wow, these guys, you know, I don't know, they're close to God. They must know. So we don't know, but we do know, yeah, that men were sort of yet again becoming the experts in something. Isn't it called mansplaining?
Yes,
something?
Mansplaining. That would be, well, and from a doctor's point of view.
Monksplaining?
Monksplaining. I like that even better. Mm-hmm. I mentioned it seems very modern day, if you will, where you have rooms full of men only, making decisions about women's bodies. I can't imagine you're a fan of that.
No, but I have to tell you what I am a fan of. I found some amazing women sometimes not for better, but sometimes for better, really changed the nature of childbirth and really sort of fought for what they thought were women's rights. It was even a woman that came up with the idea of maternity clothes, because there was a while when there was no such thing as maternity clothes, so you just stayed inside your whole pregnancy.
Wow. Now, what about managing of pain? I mean, you know, again, I the best way I think I've heard it explained to a man by a woman is trying to pee a bowling ball, out of your body. Now, I don't know if that's accurate, but managing pain, I mean, there's, you know, your knockouts, there's epidurals with those needles that are the size of horse needles, the Lamaze techniques, all those things. Some women, and we used the term earlier, natural childbirth, where they're going drug-free. Is there a more effective way of all of those different things, or is it to each his own?
It is to each his own. You know, there are some women that say, sure, give me the shot in my back. I want to be awake, but I don't want to feel all the pain of pushing, yes, this bowling ball out of me right now. And then there are other women, I'd be in the category of, I don't want the shot in my back. And so there are other ways of dealing with it. And it all depends on sort of who's around you. Yes, relaxing helps, as it does with any kind of pain, but it's not going to make it go to zero. So I think it is a really personal choice. It's interesting now because women almost feel guilty or that they have to have a reason. You ask any woman, it still feels like, you know, yes, I ran a marathon. Women love to say, yeah, I gave birth without any pain drugs at all. It's still sort of this badge of honor, and women who choose to use an epidural have to say, here's the reason why I did it. So, you know, we shouldn't be so judgmental, and it's a really private situation, and women shouldn't have to feel that they have to defend publicly their reasons. Everyone has a different pain tolerance.
Well, when women are pregnant, we're talking with Dr. Randy Epstein today, when women are pregnant, doctor, you know, we hear the jokes about, I want ice cream and pickles or whatever. Why do those... Excuse me. Why do those cravings manifest? Any idea on that?
You know, these are one of those topics that we're starting to do research in now. You know, it's kind of wasn't when men were doing all the research in the 1950s. It wasn't, you know, a hot topic of research. It's interesting. I mean, the bottom line is we're still trying to understand the effects of how hormones that change dramatically during pregnancy, what their impact is. so it's thought that that's why women feel nauseated. It could be the higher levels of estrogen or how progesterone changes during pregnancy. One of the things that many women find, and I know this happened with me the first pregnancy, is that you're more sensitive to odors. I couldn't open the refrigerator door. Just the odors, it was such an assault on me. Now, I did ask a researcher who does olfaction research, and according to her studies, nothing came up. She said, no, you're not more sensitive to smells, according to her scientific evidence. But I could swear from my own anecdotal study of one person, me, that I did feel that the odors were more, I don't know, I was more sensitive to it. I believe it's something in the hormones, but we haven't gotten the studies to prove it yet.
Let me finish with this, doctor. If you were to sit a room full of dumb men down, and I'm using that as a blanket statement, but we are. If you were to sit a room full of men down that have wives that are pregnant or becoming pregnant, what is the best advice you would give to them? Deal with the hormonal changes, stay out of the way. What would you say to them?
Oh, I would say starting now and for the rest of your marriage, like this doesn't end on delivery. Oh, I think just to realize that, like, your wife is probably always right, that just to cater to her whims, and then life will be much easier for you and for her, but I think it'll be easier for you too.
Now that is some solid medical advice right there.
I'm sure there's a study. I am sure I can find a scientific study to back up what I just said.
I'm sure you can too. Dr. Randy Epstein, your book's called Get Me Out, A History of Childbirth, From the Garden of Eden, to the Sperm Bank. I guess it's probably available at Amazon bookstores near us.
It is. And for this week only, the ebook is $1.99.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Cheaper than a cappuccino.
And
it lasts a lot longer.
And how do they find? Would that be at Amazon too?
You can go to Amazon and just click right on the ebook, $1.99. I mean, it's really nothing. It's less than a tip. It's less than what you should be giving your waitress after lunch.
Excellent. Doctor, thanks for enlightening us. I hope I didn't drag down the conversation too much. But thank you very much. Very, very interesting talking to you today. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks for inviting me.
Bye-bye. All right. We learned something, Michael.
Yeah.
We learned something.